We're holding on page 60 in Shabbos, Ois Membeis. Previously, we learned a couple of statements that Rav Abba said in the name of Rish Lakish about Talmidei Chachamim who are learning together in the proper way, that Hashem listens to them, and Hashem appreciates them, and Hashem loves them, and so forth. So now the Gemara is going to bring several other things that Rav Abba says in the name of Rav Shimon ben Lakish, even though they're not directly related to what we had before. A person who lends a poor person money is greater than one who gives him tzedakah. And in fact, the Rambam in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, when he lists the eight levels of tzedakah, he lists the top level is lending him money, or as the Gemara is going to say now, giving him money to invest or whatever. There is indeed noise in the back. Can we keep the noise down, please, if we want to have conversations? There's many other places that we can have them. Umatel b'kis yosim mikulam, and the one who puts money or merchandise for a poor person that he can share in the profits is greater than all of them, is even greater than lending him money. Because Marsha points out, when you're borrowing money, usually you don't borrow very much. A person is usually embarrassed to take out a large loan. So then what's going to happen? He borrows enough for his immediate needs, and that's that. Then he's back where he was before, and he's embarrassed because now he doesn't have anything to pay back the other guy, and now he's embarrassed to even see him, etc. When you invest, though, then the other, you're going to give him a lot to begin with because you realize it takes money to make money, and therefore you're going to give him a substantial amount, so therefore he'll have enough to be able to actually make a decent profit on it and eventually to have a keren, to have the principal enough available to be able to repay later on. So therefore, in that sense, better. With that said, Iyun Yaakov points out it really depends. I mean, the fact is, again, Rambam and Hilchos Matnas Aniyim lists eight levels of tzedakah, and the top level he lists over there includes both of these, lending money and matel malai. Based on our Gemara, he should have said there's nine. The highest is matel malai, the second one is lending, and then you have the other seven that are various levels of doing tzedakah.
What's the title of the first one?
Matel malai, that's what we're saying in the Gemara, is giving him money for investment.
Oh, investment.
Yeah. Matel b'kis, yeah. So, it could be, yeah, they could make the arrangement. Let's say 50-50.
The highest level is to redeem a Jew from prison.
That's true, but we're not dealing with, that's true, but we're not dealing with that right here. Anyway, so Iyun Yaakov says it really depends after all. Sometimes you have a person who would prefer a loan because, he's not really the kind of person who's capable of running a business. So in that case, so therefore the Rambam, that's the kind of thing why the Rambam just lists them as one, because it's true. Our Gemara is saying that where possible, matel b'kis is greater, but not always is the recipient to the kind of person who's capable of that. Okay. Another thing, Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Shimon Lakish. If you have a Talmid Chacham who takes revenge and bears a grudge like a snake. So in other words, he doesn't have really very good midas. Now the truth is the Gemara does elsewhere mention that a Talmid Chacham should, when somebody insults the Torah, he should be Noten Benota Kenachash. So here either we're talking about that, or maybe even we're talking about that we could even be talking about where he's notum minotum in the inappropriate times, but nevertheless, because he's a Talmid Chacham, you're still going to gain from having benefit, but you're still going to gain from being in his company. Therefore, chogreyu al masnecha, tie him as a belt around your waist. Like, in other words, a belt is very close to a person. You have actually psukim him in Yirmiyah, where Hashem uses that exact metaphor. He says the Jewish people are close to me like a belt on a person's waist. So here we're saying that even so, a person would never use a snake as a belt, but here, because that snake is a Talmid Chacham, nevertheless, you stand to benefit from him more than you stand to lose out from his not such a good midas, and therefore go ahead and keep him as close as possible to you. On the other hand, if the person is an Amaretz, even though he's a Chosid, we actually had last week's Pirkei Avos, Loi Amaretz Chosid, but even if on the surface he seems to be a Chosid, Al Todor B'Shchunasai, don't live in his neighborhood, because Rashi explains, he doesn't know the details of mitzvahs, his Chasidus is not really complete, it's flawed, and you're going to end up learning from him. So even though you think that he has good midas, but nevertheless don't trust in that, because realize you're going to end up learning inappropriate things from him. Here is another one. This one is not just Amar of Abba, Amar of Shimon Lakish. This is a couple of different versions. Amar of Kahana, Amar of Shimon Lakish. Va'amila Amar of Asi, Amar of Shimon Lakish. Va'amila Amar of Abba, Amar of Shimon Lakish. So apparently three different Talmudim of his said it over in his name. A person who raises a mean dog in his house that barks at people and frightens them. He prevents chesed from being in his house. Now Baal Shor explains that actually you have a Gemara in Bava Kamma that deals with the halacha angle of it. A person is not allowed to keep a mean dog like that in his house. There you have the matter of loisasim domim beisecha, because you're not allowed to keep anything dangerous around your house, and a dog like that may bite and harm people. Here we're talking about even that you yourself know, you have the word ra over here is in parentheses, so in brackets. So Maharal Shor is explaining, in other words, the original girsa would have been without it. Even though the dog is not, you, the owner of it, know it's not actually a dangerous dog, but everybody else does not know that. They're thinking that it's dangerous. Therefore, Orchim aren't going to want to come. Poor people are going to be afraid to come to ask for tzedakah. So therefore, a person who raises such a dog is preventing chesed from being in his house. That would be an example of it, yeah. Yeah. But again, we're saying over here that even if we're talking about, now, maybe I guess you could say, you know, you have nowadays like these little tiny poodles that, the only danger they are to a person really is if you might trip over them. Maybe you could say those are different. But we're talking about the passions of a dog. We're talking about a dog that people may think is in fact dangerous. Anyway. So Shanema, as the Pasuk says in Iyov, Lamos Mere'ehu Chosed, the simple meaning, Mephoshim explained on the Pasuk, it means the person who withholds Chesed from his friend. The Mephoshim explained over there, the word Lamos has a meaning of withholding. But here the Gemara's Darshaning, Shekhen Baloshim Yevonim, Kodem Lakelev, Lamas. In Greek, Lamas is a word for a dog. So, Aruch HaSholem discusses it and says, I mean, on the face of it, the Greek word for a dog is something else. He relates it maybe to a Greek word for a glutton, because that's dogs often are gluttonous, and therefore they can be called that. Anyway, whatever the case, we're doushening it that way. So therefore, in effect, we're doushening the pasuk, lamos, when a person has a dog in his house, mere'ehu chosed, he's preventing chesed from going to his friend. So Rashi says, in that case, how we say, where's the taking away? In the simple meaning of the pasuk, lamos means to withhold. But in the drosha, where do you have that? Rashi explains, the mem of mere'ehu automatically implies it means from. So automatically it means withheld from. So therefore we can darshan it that way. Because there's a dog, mere'ehu chosed, therefore goodness, chesed, is being withheld from the other person. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar, Afkodik Meni Yiras Shemayim. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says that also a person who has such a dog is taking away from himself Yiras Shemayim. Shenema, because the same passage continues, V'Yiras Shaka Yazov, he abandons the fear of Hashem. What's the connection? Marsha says, because, like this, a person has a dog, usually he has it to guard his house. So he doesn't trust the protection of Hashem through the mezuzah, and he thinks that he needs a dog for protection. So therefore, that shows he's lacking in his Yiras Shemayim. I once saw a cute quote from the famous Yiddishist writer Shalom Aleichem 100-odd years ago. He said, if you see a Jew raising a dog, either the Jew is not much of a Jew or the dog is not much of a dog. Anyway. So the Gemara gives an example of this and how a dog can be harmful even if it's not objectively a bad dog. Hahi itza da'ilalahu beisal mefa. There was a woman went into a certain house to bake. She didn't have an oven available in her house, so she was going to bother. She was going to borrow from somebody else. Somebody else allowed her to use his oven. Novach Bokalba, and a dog barked at her when she came in. Isaka Vlada, and her baby, she was pregnant, the baby moved from its place, and she's starting to miscarry. From the fear of the dog. Omala Mora Debesa, so the Balabas tells her, Loi Sidchali, don't be afraid, the Shkili Nive of Shkilin Tofre. Don't worry, his Nive, which means his sharp teeth, the canine teeth, have been removed. And also his claws have been removed, so there's no way that he could bite you or scratch you or whatever. Omrelay, but she tells him, Shkilati Vosach, Vashadi Achizri, you might as well take your favor and go throw it in the thorns. Kvar, in other words, it's useless. Kvar Nod Vlad, my baby already moved out of place. I'm already starting the process of miscarrying because I was frightened by the dog. And the Gemara, and so for that reason, that's the kind of thing the Gemara explains. And Baba Kama is why a person shouldn't raise this kind of dog, because again, even if it's not, even like here, he took care to, the owner took care to remove the dangerous teeth and the claws. Nevertheless, other people aren't going to realize that, and they're going to be frightened by it. Okay. Another vert that also is something that Rish Lakish says, or here we have a machloikas on it. Amar Rav Huna, my dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk in Kehelas, smach bachur b'yalusecha, bachur, the Shlomo HaMelech is addressing him, young man, be happy in your youth, v'yitivcha libcha b'mei b'choresecha, let your heart make you feel good in your youthful days, v'halich b'darchi l'becha of marei necha, go in the ways of your heart and according to what your eyes see. So it sounds like Shlomo is saying, go do whatever you want, don't worry about it. But then he finishes off, know that for all of this, Hashem will bring you to judgment. So what does that mean? Ad kan divrei yetzer hara, mikan ve'elach divrei yetzer tov. So Rav Huna explained, the first half of the pasuk is the yetzer hara speaking. This is Shlomo personifying and telling, this is you, what your yetzer hara is going to tell you. You're a young man, live it up. Don't worry about anything. But the end of the pasuk is warning you, the yetzer tov comes in and says, but realize that there are going to be consequences. Rish Lakish Omer, Rish Lakish says no differently. Ad kan divrei Torah. The first half of the pasuk is talking about divrei Torah. So it's not saying do whatever you want. It's saying learn the simcha of tov levav and go according to your heart, meaning to understand what you're seeing and you're learning and what you're perceiving in your heart with your learning. And then mikan ve'elach l'maisin tovim. The second half of the pasuk is saying be aware that you're going to be taken to account in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, everything that you learned but weren't mekayim. Then realize, in other words, it's not just enough to be learning Torah and enjoying it and so forth, it also has to go together with mice and toad. That's how Rashi learns. Marsha learns differently. After all, we learned earlier in the Masechta that when a person is judged, or actually we mentioned it earlier in the Masechta, the place itself where the Gemara mentions it is actually in Sanhedrin, that when a person is judged in the base of Shamayla, the first thing he's judged for is about divrei Torah. Did he learn or not? So how are you saying over here that he's first judged about whether he did mice and toad? So rather, Marsha says like this. The first half, according to Rav Huna, it's going like this. It's saying that, fine, the Yetzer Hara is telling you that, do whatever you want. The Yetzer Tov is telling you that, the Yetzer Tov is telling you that if you follow the Yetzer Hara's advice, then you're going to wind up in trouble. So then we're saying, even with Divrei Torah, a person learns when he's younger, And Taka, you should learn, like Rashi is saying, the simcha of tov levav, but afterwards, a person needs to be going in the way of mice and tovim, and in other words, don't be looking at bad things. Realize that on all of these, both Divrei Torah and mice and tovim, you're going to end up being judged in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, and Divrei Torah will come first, because that's what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. The Rif discusses over here, and Eitz Yosef discusses in different Osius, why is Shlomo even talking that way? After all, you read the first half of the pasuk, you're going to come, according to Rav Huna anyway, you're going to come to a very wrong understanding. You're going to think he's telling you, do whatever you want. So the Rif explains at some length it's all part of the Yetzer Hara, that Shlomo is telling you part of the Yetzer Hara's strategy. Realize afterwards that he's telling you, you know what, when you're younger, if you do such averus, then Hashem doesn't hold it as much against you, because he realizes that you're a more excitable type anyway, and you'll have the opportunity to become Baal Teshuva, and a Baal Teshuva is greater than a tzaddik, so go ahead and do that, and then meanwhile you don't realize that you're going to end up getting enmeshed in it. And then Eitz Yosef says somewhat similarly. He says, in other words, that the Yetzer Hara is telling you, enjoy the Dvorim HaMutarim. Fine, of course, I'm not telling you to do Dvorim HaAsurim, but go ahead and do the Dvorim HaMutarim, and you don't realize that you're getting more and more into it. You have a few places in Hayom Yom, for example, where it talks about the idea that the Yetzer Hara is very sneaky, and he doesn't tell a person to start with Averus. He tells him, Asay Kach, we have it later in the Masechta. Actually, the Yetzer Hara tells you today, do this, which means even, there's places that ever talks about it, means that the Yetzer Hara will tell you, do a mitzvah, but do it for your own selfish reasons rather than because the Eidosh is telling you. And eventually, it leads from bad to worse. The Gemara then goes on to talk about, since we're talking about various kinds of ornaments and then items of clothing and then and accessories and whatnot that a person isn't allowed to wear on Shabbos. So that leads the Gemara to talk about also certain dinim of them as far as Tumah V'Tahara. So the Gemara starts by saying that we learn from the tzitz that normally you have a piece of cloth has to have a certain minimum size to be makabel tumah. 3x3 is the minimum for most types of cloth. But the Gemara says, if you have something that's woven to begin with, to be narrower than that, then it's makabel tumah because it was woven specifically for that purpose. And the Gemara says, we learn that from the tzitz. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? The tzitz was not woven. The tzitz was a solid gold plate, as we have the quotation now in the Gemara. Tanya, tzitz from tassels of, the tzitz was like a golden plate. The roch b'shtei etzbois, it was 2 etzbois wide, because it went on his forehead. So this way, 2 etzbois wide would cover his forehead. Elsewhere, the Gemara mentions that he would wear it in such a way that the part of his hair would be visible, his hair would be visible between the top of the tzitz and the bottom of the mitznefes, and there he'd wear the tefillin chodosh. Anyway, umukuf me'ozen la'ozen, it went around the front of his forehead from one ear to the other. The cost of all of the base shikid, yud kei milamayla, the kodesh lamed lamata. The pasuk says on that it was supposed that it had to say on it Kodesh Lashem, but you don't want to write Kodesh Lashem straight out because then you're writing other words before Hashem's name and it's not respectful. It's one thing, for example, in a Sefer Torah. Of course, you have words before Hashem's name, but you also have words after it, so therefore it's not so bad. But here we have only the 2 words on the tzitz, Kodesh Lashem, then it would be disrespectful to put Hashem's name last. Therefore, they would put the Yud Kei, with the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, was on top, and the word Kodesh and the letter Lamed, were Lamata, were underneath. Now, you have a few different explanations, a few different opinions between Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam, how exactly it was laid out. Rashi over here says that it means exactly that. You had the top line said Yud Kei Vav Kei, and directly underneath it, it said Kodesh and the letter Lamed. There's a different girsa, Rashi brings from one of his rebbeim that the lamed went together with the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. So it would be Lashem on top and Kodesh on the bottom. Tosfos doesn't like that because then it doesn't read in the order that it's supposed to. Then you're going to read it. Hashem Kodesh La or Lashem Kodesh. And that's not the way it says in the pasuk. So Tosfos gives a couple of other possibilities. Maybe they wrote the word Kodesh on the beginning of the bottom line and Lashem on the end of the top line, so that way it's on top, but it's still, you can read it like that. Maybe they wrote Lashem at the end of the first line and Kodesh at the beginning of the second line, so that way, that's the same as the previous one. Whatever, you have a couple of different ways that they explain how it could be done, that Lashem is on top and you still have Kodesh on bottom and it's still readable like that. That's what it is, I think. Another way was that you have Lashem at the beginning of the first line and Kodesh at the end of the second line, and it also works that, and it also works that way. Whatever the case, they had different ways. But Omer Abeliezer Rabbi Yosi Anira Isiv Biroimi, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yosi says, I saw the tzitz in Rome. So there's he was one of the generation of the Tanoim who lived in the time of he was a contemporary of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and the other Tanoim of that time. So this is we're talking 70 or 80 years after the Churban. So all the treasures of the Beis Mikdash were in Rome. The Gemara in Ne'ilah tells us a whole long story where Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yosi had gone, where Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yosi rather had gone to Rome to be mevatel a serious gzera against the Yidden, and a shed came out and helped them. He came and possessed the emperor's daughter, and she's screaming for their help, and they come and cure her, and in gratitude, the emperor tells them they can go into his treasury and find whatever they want and take it, and they find the document with the Xera, and they rip it up. But while they were there, they got to see the various items of the Beis Mikdash that had been laying there for 70 or 80 years. So Rabbi Yosi says, Anira Isid Beroimi, I saw that sits in Rome, the cost of Kodesh Lashem, the Shita Achas, and it said on it, Kodesh Lashem, all in one line, so not like you Chachamim are saying that it was on 2 lines. By the way, as far as Rashi's opinion that you have Hashem on top and Kodesh on bottom, and Tosfos' problem that in that case it doesn't read according to the order of the Pesukim, I once saw an explanation, might be from Rav Shamshon Afral Hirsch, I don't remember. He says, the vort is, since you have the names of the Shvatim on the Choshen, so in effect what it is you're reading from the bottom to the top. It's as if like you have Reuven, Kodesh, Lashem, reading upward, Shimon, Kodesh, Lashem, and so forth with each of the other Shvatim. Anyway, so what's going on? If Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi is saying that he saw it written in one line, why do the Chachamim maintain their opinion that it's in two lines? And in fact, the Rambam paskens that way. So the Kesef Mishnah and Rambam explains that the Chachamim would agree that sometimes, the Rambam himself writes, that sometimes they would write it that way. Sometimes when they have to, every so often, they'd have to replace the tzitz. The same tzitz didn't last for 420 years of the second Bais HaMikdash. So sometimes they would write it all on one line. And the Chachamim agree that it's kosher. They're saying the ideal way is to write it on two lines. So that particular one is what Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi saw in Rome. The Rebbe has a sicha about it, part of the same series of sichas where the Rebbe talked about the shape of the menorah, that it's not like you have on the Arch of Titus, even though they're depicting over there what they captured in the spoils, and the same way a number of other things of the Bais HaMikdash. So in that series of sichas, the Rebbe talked about this, that we might say the tzitz that they had over there in Rome that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi saw is not actually an actual tzitz that the Kohen Gadol wore. We shouldn't assume that something holy like that fell into the hands of the Romans. We should assume that it was hidden away. But since the Romans every so often would have seen the Kohen Gadol wearing his big kahuna, and occasionally they would have seen him with one that has it written all on one line, and therefore they could fool them with a fake that has it all on one line. Had it been that always it has to be written on two lines, and they would have realized this obviously isn't the genuine article, and they still would have continued to look for it. So we can say that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi saw one with one line, and the Chachamim telling him, A, that's not necessarily the original, and B, even if it is, all that shows is you're allowed to write it on one line, but not that that's the ideal way to do it. Okay. The Gemara goes on to talk about the dinim of Tumah v'Tahara, of various sizes of pieces of cloth and clothing and jewelry and whatnot. So in this connection, then, the Gemara brings a pasuk from the story with the war in Midian, and therefore the Gemara digresses to talk about another pasuk from there that lists various kinds of jewelry. So at the end of the war with Midian, the pasuk says the officers of the army came to Moshe and they told him, "Manakrev es korban Hashem, we're bringing an offering to Hashem. Ish v'goyim, each person who found any gold ornament," and they list a couple of different things, "tabas ogel v'chumas." So we're bringing them as a gift to the Mishkan. So tabas is pretty obvious. It means a ring. What is ogel and what is chumas? Amar Rav Elazar, ogel is a tfus shel dadin. So Rav Elazar says an ogil is a cast or an image of the breasts. So Rashi says that the woman puts it over them. So the Pashtus, we're talking like a bra or something like that made out of gold. Rashi, Marsha points out that afterward, the word ogil means round. It is true you have a different pasuk in Yechezkel that mentions agilim as a bracelet. But after all, since basically it means something round, so here also it can mean this thing as well, because that part of those parts of the body are also round. And kumas that fus shel beis harechem, the kumas is an image of the beis harechem of a woman's private area. Omer Rav Yosef, ihochi hainim de metagumin and mochoich. That explains, says Rav Yosef, why in Targum Onkelos the kumas is translated as mochoich. Rav Yosef, we find in many places in Shas, was an expert in the Targum. There was another explanation brought. Since he was blind, he couldn't learn Torah Shemachsav, because Torah Shemachsav has to be learned from in writing. So therefore, he specialized in Torah Shemal Peh, including Targum. Anyway, so he says, now I understand why it's called Mochosh, Gavra, maybe the dead Gichuch, because a Kumas then was saying is something that leads to Gichuch, to laughter, where laughter in turn is a euphemism for Znus. So a kuma is being associated with that part of the body has to do with that. Omale Rava or Rava, you don't even need that. Migufe de krosh mamina. The word kumas itself suggests this point. Kumas stands for kan mekoim zima. Here is the place of zima. Here is the place of immorality, implying that it's an ornament that has to do with that area of the body. Now, earlier in the psukim, earlier in that parak, it says, "Vayiktsef Moshe al pkudei hachoyel." Moshe got angry with the officers of the army, and he said to them, "So in the pasuk, he says to them, how could you leave the women of Midian alive? Don't you realize they were the original ones that we had the whole problem with by Baal Peor?" So Amar of Nachman, Amar Rabbi Babua, it means Amar lahem Moshe liYisrael Shema Chazartim l'kol kochem arishim. This that you're telling me you're bringing all of these gold ornaments as an offering to Hashem. What did you go back to your old mess up? Just like over there in Shittim, you were Mezana with Bnei Smoyav. Maybe you did the same thing now during this war with Midian, and therefore you're saying you have to bring a korban to be mechaper for yourselves. Amrulai, they answered him, no. As the pasuk says, "Lenifkan mimenu ish," not a single man is missing from us, and that means not just that nobody's missing in action; it means also nobody is lacking in any of their yiddishkeit. Amalahem, so Moshe says, and can't kapara lama. Well, then what do you need to bring a kapara for? Amrulai, they answered him, "Im midei aver yatzanu." Sure, we may have gotten away with not doing any actual averis. Midei hirhu lo yatzanu. We certainly couldn't escape the hirhu that we had wrong thoughts about these women. In fact, Tosfos points out, Tosfos not printed over here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos in Gemara points out, so what's the problem? We know the Jewish soldiers, you know, out of fast toya. They would have been allowed to take these women and actually have relations with them. So what do they mean? Tosfos says that's true. But the fact is, for example, a soldier, we know the halacha is, we just had it in the end of Rambam, a soldier is not allowed to take two women as fast toya. So therefore, you could well have that there's one that might have technically been mutter to him, but then another one that he has hirhur over, even where she's taka off limits for him. So that's what we're saying. Those were the kinds of hirhurim we had. Therefore, miyad b'nachar this korban Hashem, and that is why we bring a korban to Hashem to be mechaper for the hirhur, for the wrong thoughts that we have. It's not a korban ola per se, it's a korban of gold. Moshe doesn't like this explanation of Rashi, though, because the problem with it is that the Yitzchak Moshe al Pudei Achol is many, many psukim before they offer the gold. They offer the gold towards the end of that parak, around Pasuk Nun. The Yitzchak Moshe, meanwhile, is around Pasuk Tesvav, so over 30 psukim earlier. So rather, Moshe says, no, the Yitzchak Moshe, and that he's saying in the Gemara over here, Shema Chazartim L'Kol Kolchem, is that he's saying, how could you leave the women alive? Hein Heina Hoyu, as he goes on to say, they're the very ones that you people were Mizana with in Baal Peor. Why are you leaving them now? Why are you leaving them alive now? So they answered, no, we didn't do anything with them. The post goes on to mention how they dealt with the various spoils and whatnot, and then eventually it gets back to the topic of that they said that Moshe says, well, so what you said before, well, nifkad mimenu ish, then why are you bringing a kapara? And they're answering because of the hirhu that we had, but not that we were actually mizana with them. So don't be angry with us that we left the women alive because we didn't do it because we were mizana with them. Ion Yaakov discusses Sataka, why did they leave the women alive? And then he says, because they figured, you know, that Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva that the ideal kind of tshuva is when a person is in the very same situation, and for example, the same woman is available, and he still has his full strength and so forth, and he holds himself back. So they figured to do that kind of tshuva, we'll have the women around, and we'll still hold ourselves back, and Moshe told them, that's no good, you can't do it that way. So Tonet Ve Rabbi Shmuel. So in fact, we learn in a brisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, but named Ma'ahu Tzruchu Yisrael Shabbosah Der Kapara. Why indeed did the Jews of that time need Kapara? Mipnesha Zonwe Nehem Mina Erva, because they feasted their eyes on Erva. Because in other words, like we were just saying, they did have Hirhurim about these women. They Taka didn't do anything with them, but still that is reason enough. Marshall says also the word zonu can also be related. Meloshim znus, they committed znus, so to speak, with their eyes rather than b'maisa. By the way, this that we're saying that they had such sensitivity that they realized that even for hirhur they need to bring a kapara and they hadn't actually done anything wrong. Rashi mentions it in Shir Hashirim. You have one of the psukim where Hashem metaphorically is praising the Jewish people. He mentions, he says, your teeth are like a flock of perfect sheep that have just come up from bathing. And Rashi explains over there from a medrash that the teeth refers to the soldiers, like here, where you have these soldiers are acting so perfectly and so beyond so lefnim eshur hasadin that even a hirhur, they realize there's something they need a kapara for and they give away all the gold for that. So the Gemara continues, Amr of Sheshes, Mipnei Man Mona HaKosev Tachshitin Shebachutz Im Tachshitin Shebefnim. Now, in the list of ornaments that we said that they're bringing, we mentioned three things. Tabas, which is a ring, like a finger ring. Ogil, we said, which is a type of bra. And Kumas, which is something associated with the Mokum Erva. Why is the Pasuk listing all those kinds of things together? Something that's worn on the finger with other ones that are worn in more private areas. The reason is, Loi Malach, to come and tell you, call him a stackle, but Etzbach, Tanish Al Isha, a man who looks inappropriately, even at the little finger of a woman, to Ilam a stackle, but Mokam Aturpa, it's as if he's looking at the shameful area. In other words, obviously there are cases, you know, a guy's going on a shidduch, for example, he needs to look at the girl to see whether he's attracted to her, but we're talking about other than that, he has no business looking and feasting his eyes on her, and if he does, then the Gemara is saying, so that's why in effect they're saying, we have to bring the rings, because just by looking at their finger, it's already as if we're looking in the places where you have a kumaz or an ogil, and we need a kapara for that. Okay. The Gemara goes on to talk about more dinim, there's certain of these various accessories and whatnot that it mentions in these Mishnayos. There's a couple of them. The Mishnah says that even though you're not allowed to wear them out in the street, you're allowed to wear them in the chotzer, which is a more private area. So the Gemara discusses, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Kol Mokam She'osru Chachamim, Mipnei Maris Ha'ayin, whenever the Chachamim said that something is osur because of Maris Ha'ayin, because it looks like an Aveda is being done, Afilu B'chadrei Chadorim osur. Then it's osur to do the same thing, even in a room inside a room. An example of it the Gemara gives is from later in the Masechta, you have a case where a person is walking and his clothes got soaked with water, so he wants to take them off and hang them up to dry. But if he does it in a public area, people are going to think he washed them on Shabbos. So the Mishnah over there says he can hang them up in a private area. But then Rav says his rule over here that no, that would actually be also, you can't hang them up in a private area either, because again, since it's also because of Maris Ayin, then it would be also even B'chadri Chadari. So the Gemara says, Tznan, what do you mean though? We learn in the previous parak when it talks about accessories for animals, V'loi B'zug Afati Shepokuk. The Mishnah had said over there that you can't have an animal go outside wearing a bell around its neck, even if the bell is stuffed with straw or what have you, so it doesn't ring on Shabbos. V'tanya idach pekik or zug v'tzavara. On the other hand, a different Braisa says that you could stuff up the bell that's around an animal's neck with straw or whatever, or metayelim of a chotzer, and then you're allowed to have the animal walk around in the chotzer. So we see that something which is also in Rosh Hashanah, because the Gemara says over there people are going to think you're taking the animal to market or something, is mutter in the chotzer. So that goes against the Rav's rules. And Rav says tanoi hivchola. So it's actually a machlokas tanoim, and it explains that yes, you have there's a tana that holds like Rav, and there's a different tana that holds that it would be also only in a place where Maris Ayin is relevant. The halacha is like Rav, so therefore things that are also because of Maris Ayin are also even in private. So then the Gemara goes on to talk about, there are a couple of types of accessories, a wig and a couple of other things that it says a woman is allowed to wear in the chotzer, even though she wouldn't be allowed to wear them in the Shusat Abim. Again, in the Shusat Abim, there might be the problem, it might fall off, it might be something she'd take off to show her friends, etc. But nonetheless, most of them, then it's also in the chotzer as well, but there's a couple of them that allows a woman to wear in the chotzer. So Omar Ula Kadeshwa Tsgana al Baila. So Ula says the reason for that is the Chacham didn't want that a woman should be unattractive to her husband on Shabbos, therefore they allowed her a couple of her types of jewelry and accessories. Kedetanya, as we learned in a Braisa, similar kind of idea. In last week's parasha, we have the Hadova Bidasa, a woman who is Dova when she's Nida, the simple meaning of the meaning of Dova. Rashi mentions in a couple of places it has two meanings. It means flow, because of course Nida has a flow of blood, and it also means sick, because when a woman is Nida, very often she has various kinds of physical aches and pains that go along with it. Anyway, so when it says Bidasa in her Nida, so Zkenim Harishonim Amru, the Zkenim of earlier generations said that it means, Nidasa literally means to be kept away. The Shodesh, or the word Nida, means to be kept away from other people. So therefore, they said, the Pasuk is telling you, Shalot Tikho, she's not allowed to put on eyeshadow when she's Nida. Volot Tifkos, she's not allowed to do Tifkos, which, there's a few different explanations of Rishonim what it is. Rashi says over here that it means putting rouge on her face so her cheeks look red. There's different other possibilities that Rashi and Tosfos and other Mephoshim mention in other places. It means parting her hair, I mean, whatever the case. So the Skanim or Rishonim said she can't do that while she's Nida. Volot Tiskashik, and she's not allowed to wear colorful clothes, so she has to be completely removed and separated from her husband, even to the extent where she looks unattractive to him. Ad Shabbat of Akiva Valimid, until Rav Akiva came and taught, no, it's not so. Im Kainat Magana al Baila, if you do it that way, then the woman is going to be unattractive to her husband. V'nimtza Baila Magarsha, and her husband may even go so far as to divorce her. So what does the pasuk mean by saying when she's sick with her nida, what does it need to add? The word benidasa, it means benidasa teheh, shetovah gamayim, means she remains a nida until she tovels in water. So even though in the psukim, in Parashas Metzora, it doesn't say in so many words that a nida needs to tovel. And in fact, Tosfos and other Rishonim discuss in a number of places where Taka we know, but this is one of the sources that a nida remains a nida until she actually tovels in a mikvah. So that's what we learn from the word benidasa. But not that she can't wear some of her cosmetics and whatnot. And by the same token, the Chachamim wanted to make sure that a woman shouldn't be so unattractive to her husband on Shabbos. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, by the way, so what were the Skenim or the Shonim thinking? He says, because in their times, maybe you had people on a higher level, and therefore, even if his wife is unattractive to him for a Shabbos or for an entire week while she's a nidda or whatever, it won't cause him, he's not going to be looking at that so much. We actually had in the previous parak, we had a short story about a guy who said whose wife had a hand amputated, and he never realized it her entire life because he was so tzniistic. So the same way, in earlier generations, people were more like that, and therefore the Chacham had no reason to worry about it. Back at this time, already people are on a lower level, and there was reason to be concerned that they might be. Rabbi Akiva is the one who also says at the end of Gittin that even if a man sees a woman who's more attractive, then that's a valid reason to divorce his first wife. So yeah, that might also factor into this, yeah. Then the Gemara goes on, the Mishnah goes on to talk about, again, more things that you're allowed to go out with on Shabbos. And one of the things the Mishnah mentions is something called shorim. Shorim literally means knots or bindings, and the Gemara explains that you have it's kind of a skula. You have a child who badly misses his father, and to the extent where it might affect his health. So you have this kind of skula dicka thing where you take something from the father's clothing and tie it around the child's arm, and that way it helps the child get over his gaguin, over this feeling of missing his father so badly. There's probably a little bit of psychological suggestion in it, whatever the case, anyway. So that leads the Gemara to discuss a number of different kshorim and a number of different segulas like that. So the Gemara says, Omer Abaya, Omer Li'ein. My mother told me, and we know throughout Shas, this is not his birth mother, because his birth mother passed away when she was giving birth to him. It's his nursemaid who raised him, his foster mother. As we find all over Shas, she was very expert in medicine, and all over Shas, we have things that she tells Abaya about medicine and health and whatnot. Anyway, she says, Kol minyone b'shmadim. Whenever you're saying any kind of lachash, any kind of spell that you say to daven on behalf of a person, should always be using the mother's name. You always do ploini ben ploinis. Why are they called minyone? Rashi says, because a lot of these lachshim you often have, as the Gemara is going to go on to say next, you often have to have that for them to be effective, you have to repeat them many times. So therefore it's called minyone, because I have to count the number of times you say them. So you should always use the mother's name.
What, that means a whisper?
Well, a lachash literally means a whisper, but it means more like a charm or a spell. You have certain kinds of remedies that are found throughout Shas. You often have, together with them, there's supposed to be a certain spell or a certain incantation or whatever that you're supposed to say with it, calling on certain malachim or calling on names of Hashem or whatever it is exactly. We're going to have examples. We're going to have a bunch of examples in the Gemara as we go along. Some of them, Rashi says, the words of them don't even make sense, but just that's how the lachash is supposed to be. But anyway, many times you're supposed to repeat them, therefore they're called minyan. So when you're mentioning the person's name in it, you should mention their name and the mother's name. There's the idea, al pi Kabbalah, that the father is more associated with the person's neshama and the mother more with the guf. So therefore, even by Avram and Sarah, the Zohar mentions that Avram is more associated with the neshama and Sarah with the guf. So therefore, that's a reason you're davening on behalf of the health of a person's guf, then you use his mother's name. This is why also in a Mishnah Berurah, we use the mother's name. There's other reasons behind it also. One interesting idea that's also brought, I think, from the Zohar is because with the father, can you ever know 100% for sure that Ploini is this person's father? After all, there's always a fraction of a percent of a chance that not. As opposed to the mother, he was born from her, so she's obviously his mother regardless. So therefore, when it comes to davening, you should use the one that's more certain. Even in Tillim, we find that Dovra Malchsechan himself, and the Abdecha Ben Amasecha. Meanwhile, after a person has passed away, you're davening for his neshama, then you use his father's name for the most part. Although for some reason in Yizkor we use the mother's name, and I've never quite understood why that is. Anyway, So as a common yoni b'shmadim, v'chol kitri b'smala. Also, Abaya says, my mother, or my foster mother told me that anytime you have to tie something like these knots or bindings that it mentions in the Mishnah, should always be on the left side. Maybe because it has to do with tefillin, then on the left side, he doesn't say what. But Amar Abaya, Amar Liyam, also Abaya says, my mother told me, kol min yone de mefarshi ked mefarshi, any enumeration, any of these spells where it says an explicit number of times, how many times to repeat it. Kedem mefarshi, okay, so it said, you say this one 3 times, you say this one 5 times, or whatever. Or deloy mefarshi, if it doesn't say how many times you're supposed to say it, aboin b'chad zimni, then you, by default, you should assume you have to say it 41 times. Again, why 41? He doesn't explain. Maybe, 41 is the gematria of aim, so maybe it has to do with this point. They have to use the mother's name, so therefore you need the gematria of aim. Okay. Also, Abaya says, my mother, my foster mother told me, La'esh sabas yoyma, when a person has a fever that lasts 1 day, or not 1 day actually, but every day, you have fever, especially fever a lot of times in the Gemara, and then later Sfarim often means malaria. And there are actually different kinds of malaria that different ones cause the fever to spike every X number of days. Some of them every day, some of them every third day, every fourth day, whatever. Anyway. So here, la'esh sabas yoyma. So here you have a fever that recurs every day. The remedy for it is lishkol zuza chivra. Take a white zuz, so a zuz coin. White means that it was just newly minted, so therefore it's very light colored. Shiny, yeah. The laser lamalachta, then you should go to a salt pan. So you have, how do they make salt in those days? The typical way was you dig trenches near the ocean or near a salty lake or whatever. You'd let some of the water flow in there, then you'd evaporate the water and you have less salt. So you go to such a place. Velisco maskile milcha. Take from there its weight of salt, the pashas mean an amount of the weight equal to the weight of the zuz, v'litzayre b'chalala debet saber, and tie it up, bundle it up in the neck hole of the person's shirt, benira barka, using a loop made out of hair. The Eloi, if not, meaning if that doesn't work, or if you can't get a new zuz or salt or what have you, then another possibility, lace of a parashas drachim, sit by a crossroads, v'chichozi shum shemona gamla d'dori midi, when you see a large ant that's carrying some food or something, lishkale, take the ant, v'lishadi v'gufsa d'nechosha, put it into a copper tube, v'listime v'evra, close up the tube with a piece of lead, the lachatme, the shisin gushpanki, and then seal it with 60 seals. So Rashi says 60, often we find in Shas, and specifically means 60, just means a large number.
It sounds like the same thing to Shamir, putting in the lead tube.
Yeah, it's similar to the Shamir, I guess, yeah. Well, there the difference is the tube itself is made out of lead. Here the tube is made out of copper. You're just closing it up with a lead plug. And then on top of the lead, you're putting, for example, Rashi says, let's say you put wax on top of the lead, and then you put tar on top of that, and clay on top of that, and so forth, a whole bunch of seals, one on top of the other. Ula barzule, then shake the tube with the ant inside, the lidre, and carry it along with you, the lemale, and say to the ant, to unach olayu tu noi aloch, my burden, meaning of my sickness, should go on you, and your burden, let's say whatever it is you're carrying, whatever piece of food or whatever, should be on me. But omelet of achabred of hunel ravashi, how is that a good idea? The dilma inish ashkeche, what if somebody else previously found the same ant and did the same kind of thing with it, the ifsikve, and he caused his illness to stop with it? Now the ant, in effect, is carrying that other guy's illness. When you say whatever you ant were carrying should go on me, and then you're back where you were. Ela lemalay, rather of achabred, Rav Huna says, instead, what you should say is to unoy or to unach aloch. My burden and your burden should both be on you. So that way, even if the ant is carrying some burden of a sickness or whatever, then you don't have to worry about it. It is already time for my internet. Yeah. Okay. So let's do the other things real quick. Yeah, I lost track of the time. All right. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula for Beis Nissen, Beis Iyar rather. Tiferes Rebbe Tiferes, Achila Rebbe, and all that. One of the special things in the Avodah of the Rebbe Maharash was, of course, his famous thing about the Achila Rebbe. And as we know, the Rebbe Maharash, the Rebbe Rashab, his son, said that nowadays, the Anhog has to be not with any kind of order or Adroga, because now is the time of the last Birurim before Ikhlas did in Meshicha, so there's no time with doing things in an order. That means you don't have to be particular about the order of the Avodah. Grab any good opportunity that comes, even if on the face of it, by Seder Avodah, you're not Shaykh to it, which is that's what the Chachila Rebbe is all about. Quick halacha. We were talking about good news and Chas V'Shalom bad news. If a person gets news that's good or not so good, even though it may, that later on, there may be other kind of consequences for it. For example, the Gemara gave the example, the person found a lost object, a lost treasure, and when the king finds out about it, he's going to confiscate it. Nevertheless, you still say Atov Ametiv, and vice versa if you have bad news, even though it's going to come something good from it, because you don't go according to how it is in the future, you go according to how it is right now.